The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome back to Feminist Book Club, the podcast. We're not just about feminist books. We are here for social justice, literature, and media in all its forms. But we do that through an intersectional feminist lens. Thanks for being here. Let's get started.
Hey everyone, before we dive into today's show, I want to remind you that the Feminist Book Club Readathon is back and it is happening July 23rd through the 25th. Today we've got a couple of great segments to get you ready for the Readathon. Neba is going to start us out by telling us where creatively to read, how to squeeze in a little extra reading during the Readathon, and then Christine has an interview with Emily Henry. We are actually giving away a copy of her book, People We Meet on Vacation, during the giveaway. You do have to be registered to be entered to win our dozens of giveaways. We've got, probably over 50, 60 books that we'll be giving away over the course of the weekend. Make sure you register. The link is in the show notes, www.feministbookclub.com/readathon. Enjoy today's show.
Hey, 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 and welcome to the Feminist Book Club podcast, the show that brings you the best of the best feminist content. I'm your host, Neba from Notes by Neba, pronouns she, her, hers. And today we're going to talk about where you can read in a readathon. The main thing that I want you guys to know is that you need a book that you like, because it's really hard to get into reading if you're forcing yourself to read books that you don't want to or that you feel obligated to read. So the most important thing with places to read is just having a book that you like. You guys already know the usual basic places, but on this episode, we're going to get weird with it because why not? We want interesting content. So when I was a kid, I got in trouble for reading too much because I'd read instead of doing literally anything. I'd skip doing homework to read. I'd read in the classroom instead of paying attention. I'd read instead of eating. I'd pretend to go to the bathroom in order to read. It started to get really elaborate because my mom caught on. So I started hiding the book under the sink. And then once she realized that, I started putting it in the Ziploc and hiding it in the toilet. So yeah, that was gross. But anyways, places you can actually read. So the other day I was on TikTok as usual and I saw this TikTok of like legal things to do at the gym that make you seem like a psychopath. And it was hilarious because this dude is like drinking a gallon of milk at the gym. He's wearing a suit. And then I see that he claims that reading at the gym makes you seem like a psychopath. And wow, I just felt so called out in that moment. I felt so attacked because I love reading at the gym. Okay, so hear me out. I hate warm-ups, but I love the endorphin rush that you get from running for a long time, but you can't really run for a long time without warming up. And I just get bored from doing a running warm-up, honestly. So enter books. Reading while power walking is just the best way to warm up. I would sort of just like power walk slash like light run. I think I set the speed to like 3.8 or 4.0 or something like that and just read like a chapter of two. I read one of my all-time favorite books, Uprooted by Naomi Novik. I read it at the gym because I wanted to just savor her writing because her descriptions are, it's like having a delicious dinner that just fills you up and is so rich and has a bunch of different flavors and textures, the way the magic just entwines with the story. And I could just rave about it forever. But anyway, so after reading for a little bit, I'd put down the book, turn up the speed, and read while thinking about whatever chapters I had just read while I was running. And I feel like I don't know, the world just got like so much more built up in my head with so much more detail because I would reimagine scenes like when she enters the dragon's room and when she like casts magic and things like that. One thing I also really liked about this novel is that it's a fantasy novel that happens in one single book, which is, I love a one shot. But anyway, reading at the gym. Also, the readathon that we are hosting here on Feminist Book Club, the readathon is the perfect time to get your adulting done. You can make that doctor's appointment that you've been procrastinating or get your teeth cleaned at the dentist and just read in the waiting room. You can renew your car registration or update your license and read while you're waiting at the DMV. Careful warning though, because you might be at the DMV so long that you'll probably finish the book, so maybe just bring two. Honestly, it just takes so long in there. It's like a weird time warp zone. But you can also read while doing your laundry at the laundromat. You can read while donating blood. You can read at the IRS office, doing all these like little adulting things. Another weirdish time is when you're waiting for something, not quite like DMV IRS energy, but more like when you're getting a tattoo or a haircut or a pedicure. I personally love to read when I'm getting a pedicure because it's just like super relaxing and it's just the perfect activity to do instead of just like scrolling for hours on your phone. And also now that it's July, it's summer, it might be hot depending on where you are. So being outdoors in a park, at the beach, that's also a great option. I like having a hammock at the park, but we've been to these places a lot in the pandemic and I'm cold even when I'm outside since I'm in San Francisco. So how about a bar instead? Maybe a nice little cocktail lounge during the day? Oh yeah. This cute little like plant bar just opened up next to me and I am absolutely in love with it. There's like plants all over the place. There's like plant themed drinks and the drinks are all really cool and like awesome looking. And so I can just go in there and like during the day and just like sit by the plants and read and have my little cocktail. And it just feels like such a nice little like self-indulgent activity. And you can always read at home, but we've kind of been there and been doing that for like the last year and a half. So let's spice it up. If you are wanting to read and you're at home, drop a bubble bath. I'm serious. Give yourself some extra luxury, because when was the last time you had a bubble bath? When was the last time you drew up just like a warm, steamy shower that just relaxed your muscles and you literally just vibed in the bathroom? Seriously, do a bath. You will thank me later. Another basic option, cafes, libraries. And I really like it when bookstores have a place for you to read. I'll often like go into a bookstore to like buy a book that I know I want. And then while I like get that book, I will like browse the shelves for something I just want to try out. And I'll read like the first 50 pages or so, something like that. And if I like it and it hooks me within that amount of time, then I'll buy that one too. Oh, and last idea. Someone once told me that they used to like regularly read while cooking until one evening they set their library book on fire and the librarian was not amused. So reading while cooking is definitely an option, but maybe keep your flammable book away from the flames, yeah? So that's all that I have for you today. Thank you so much for joining me. If you have a topic you'd like to discuss or a question you have for me, my DMs are always open and you can find me on pretty much any platform, YouTube, Insta, Twitter, TikTok, at Notes by Neba. That's all for now. I'll see you on the next page.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Feminist Book Club podcast. I am Christine Ballo, and I am joined today with Emily Henry, one of my favorite authors. I'm so excited. Emily Henry is the number one New York Times bestselling author of People We Meet on Vacation and Beach Read, as well as several young adult novels. She lives and writes in Cincinnati and the part of Kentucky just beneath it. Emily, welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Yay, I'm so excited to have you here. So before we get into it, I just have to say I've been a fan of yours for a long time, but the most recent two books, so Beach Read, I read an early copy in March of 2020. And it helped me for that first month of the pandemic. It was like
a very good month, March of 2020.
Yeah, you know, a good year. It really helped me that, you know, have something joyful to focus on. And then I read an early copy of People We Meet on Vacation a couple months ago. And I reread it over the weekend too. And it's just like brings so much joy into my heart. And thank you for that.
That makes me so happy. I mean, I'm sure we'll talk more about this, but that's like, that was the whole goal for those books, even not knowing that there was going to be a pandemic. And I'm just like really, really happy that they were able to be for other people what they were for me as a writer.
I love that. That's awesome. For any of our listeners who maybe aren't familiar with People We Meet on Vacation yet, can you give us a brief description of the book?
Yeah. So People We Meet on Vacation follows Alex and Poppy, who are two unlikely best friends that meet in college. Alex is very buttoned up. He is wearing khakis when they first meet. He's looking for the library. He's sort of a bookworm and an academic who's just very excited to be like starting school. And Poppy is a wild child. She came to the school for very different reasons. She just basically wanted to escape her small town life and get to the city and meet new people and, you know, just try new things. And that's kind of like her whole deal. And so when they meet, they immediately kind of grade on each other and they think that there's no way that they'll ever be friends. But the next summer, they end up sharing a ride home for the summer. And over the course of that road trip, they form this really special friendship that's very weird and specific to the two of them. And over the years, as they go off in their respective fields and respective cities and build their own lives, they stay connected by taking this yearly summer trip. So every year they go somewhere for a full week and it's usually just the two of them. Sometimes partners come, et cetera. But when the book starts, they actually haven't been speaking for the last 2 years. So Poppy has kind of gotten her dream career. She has her dream apartment in New York. She's writing for a fancy travel magazine. She feels like she should be happy, and yet she is not. She feels just sort of stagnant. And she decides that the thing that she needs to be happy and fulfilled is to get Alex back into her life. So she convinces him to take one last summer trip to see if they can fix their friendship. And everything that can go wrong basically does go wrong. But that's also part of the fun of the book. So basically, yeah, it tells the story of this present day trip where they're trying to fix things, but it's also interspersed with their 10 previous vacations. So you see how their relationship grew and changed and ultimately like what broke them apart.
And what inspired the book?
There were a lot of different pieces. I think this is typically how it is for me. Like I will answer it differently every time I'm asked because there really are just sort of like a lot of things I'm thinking about and suddenly they all click together and that's how I know what I'm going to write. And so for this book, there were a few different things. I, first of all, was like excited about the concept of playing with structure because I've never really done that at all as a writer. I've never thought about structure first. I've always kind of gone for the old chronological order of things. And I was like very curious about finding a new form to put my next book into. And then also I was thinking about setting and, you know, I've written in the past about Kentucky and Ohio and Michigan, which are all places I've lived for like long amounts of time and felt like I really knew and could do justice to. But when I was trying to think of like a new destination that would feel really summery and fun, all of the places I came up with were places I'd only been as a guest, as a traveler. And I think that there are writers who could have convincingly written as a local in any of those places. But for me, I just felt like I didn't think I could pull it off in a way. I mean, I think when you live in a city long enough, you know all of the secret like little haunts and you know all the best things that the tourists don't know. And I didn't think that that really was something I could achieve without just like fully moving to a new place. So I was looking at like a list of vacation destinations basically. And then I was like, you know what? I know all these places as a traveler and maybe that's just the best angle to come at it. And then it kind of clicked into place with, you know, my inspiration to do something with structure. And I thought like, what if this is just told over the course of vacations? So like structurally, that's where all that came from. Poppy and Alex kind of came from knowing I wanted to have this homage to When Harry Met Sally element. Like I was thinking about it as like almost like a gender swapped When Harry Met Sally because, you know, Alex is a little bit more like Sally in that he is sort of more traditional and like, you know, takes romance and relationships very seriously. Whereas Poppy is more just like flighty and kind of like curious and about people and just kind of wants to date around and, you know, not settle down and all of that. So that's where they came from. And then the final piece, this is like the full picture. I've never given an answer this thorough in my life.
I love it. Thank you.
Well, I'm glad. I'm like, I can stop talking at any moment. The last thing was the concept of millennial ennui, which was that I was having a conversation with a friend who is another publishing author. And this was before Beach Read had come out. We both were publishing in the YA space and had kind of quieter careers. And we had friends who had very like successful big careers. And we were talking on the phone and we were like, now that you've seen kind of like how the meat gets made and like what the best case scenario is and like, you know, what it looks like to be like this, the splashy author who who's everywhere and who's getting sent on tours and selling really well. Now that we've seen all of that happen for our friends, like, do you ever feel like you just don't have anything to dream about anymore, or there's nothing that you really want from publishing because now you understand, like, that as good as and glamorous as all of that can look, the best thing still ends up being the writing always. And so then it's like, you've been dreaming about this forever. You have it, or a small piece of it. You can see what it would look like in, like, the best case scenario. And you still realize, like, oh, the writing was, like, the best part, and it still will always be the best part. And she and I, like, agreed. We both had this kind of weird, like, sense of ennui after we'd started publishing, where we were like, oh, I got here. Now what? And in talking to more friends, even outside of the writing world, I realized that's a really common feeling for people who, like, you know, go to grad school for something specifically or apprentice for something specifically, whatever. And they get to the point where they're doing the thing that they've wanted to do for years. And it just feels like, what now? Like, what do I do now? And that's, like, where Poppy's whole emotional arc came from, was just that concept of someone who has made it, quote unquote, who has everything she thought she wanted. And it hasn't fixed her life. It hasn't filled all of the holes up in her soul. Like, she still has, like, the bad days, and she still, like, wonders if she's in the right life for herself. And I really, you know, I didn't know, like, before the book came out, I kept kind of bracing myself for people to not like Poppy or to think that she was really spoiled to have this fantastic dream life and feel this way. But I've actually found that so many people relate to it, that people are generally, like, pretty sympathetic to her.
I love Poppy. I love Poppy so much. And I definitely found that she's relatable. And I mean, ennui is, yeah, there's something almost like you feel bad to feel that.
Yeah.
But it's, guilt. Yeah. But it's, I think it's a normal, okay thing to feel. Yeah. And it maybe is a sign that you need to, you're ready to unfurl even more into, yeah, like, the next phase of your life, maybe. So I love.
And I think, you know, with the last year, I have watched so many people close to me, like, fully reevaluate their lives in a great way. I mean, the last year has been so hard and horrible in so many ways. But I have also seen people be pushed outside of their comfort zones by that, and people leave jobs they realize they've hated for a really long time. And it's like, I don't know, that moment of pause where you have to stop and think, like, is this still serving me? Yeah. I think, like you're saying, like, sometimes we treat bad feelings as something to be avoided, or like holes to be plugged, when really they're more just, like, little, you know, alerts that you need to maybe do something different.
I love the when Harry Met Sally tributes, like, the drive of them going from college, driving home. So tropes as a writer versus tropes as a reader, do your favorites line up, or do you is it different, like, what you enjoy writing about versus what you enjoy reading about?
That's a fantastic question that no one has ever asked me. I love that. Yes.
Yay!
But Christine is doing the happy dance because it's such a good question. Okay. Yeah, I think that you're onto something there, because I don't really often enjoy writing or reading friends to lovers. But I loved writing this book and had such a good time. And you know, with enemies to lovers, I love it when I love it, but a lot of the time I'm just sort of like, not for me, and that's fine. But it's just so interesting, because I think with enemies to lovers, we all have, like, our own different standards of what's, like, too far, like, what's being too mean, when are these people just, like, toxic for each other, whatever, like, how roughly do we like to joke? So as a reader, I think I love or enemies to lovers when I love it, but there are a lot of times that it's just not quite for me. And I love writing it too, but at the same time, it never stays enemies. You know, I think Beach Read was started out as an enemies to lovers book, but very quickly on, it was just like, I don't want these people to have this like unhealthy, like sickly dynamic that they're really entrenched in. And there are people who do it really well, where it's like that, it never feels like that. It never feels like twisted or bad for these people. And I don't really know how they pull it off. So as a reader, I can enjoy that. But as a writer, it's like, I just kind of needed them to transition to not enemies pretty quickly. I do love reading and writing the one bed scenes. I got like tagged in someone's story the other day that was like, can we just agree to stop doing the one bed like trope? And I like so badly wanted to share it and just write no, but I didn't, because I didn't want people to like, you know, you just never know. People will be like, now I'm going to go harass this person or whatever. And I didn't want to embarrass them. Like they probably didn't think I'd actually see it, but I just thought it was really funny because I was like, ha ha, no, I do not want to stop. I think many of us do not want to stop with the one bedding. Like that is fun.
That is one of my favorite tropes.
I'm glad to hear it. Cause like now I know that not everyone feels that way. Didn't know that before. I also really like the caring for someone sick, trope, which I didn't even really know was a trope until I wrote it into this. And then readers were like, oh, it has the, you know, caring for one another while sick trope. And that's so like, I love that. And so now I have realized that's an ongoing thing that happens. And I do like reading it when it happens. I do remember a scene in The Hating Game that's that, and it's really sweet.
Do you have any, whether in books or in movies, any favorite meet cutes?
Oh my gosh, that is such a good question. I really like, let me think about this. I love most meet cutes. I really like in You've Got Mail, like we were talking about. I love the, and The Shop Around the Corner as well. I love the meet cute of like the online or, you know, written relationship that is one way. And then you meet this person in real life and it's a different thing. I love that kind of trope, I guess. And then specifically, I really like in While You Were Sleeping, you know, Sandra Bullock has sort of this like weird, like she has like three weird meet cutes in a way where it's like, there's the meet cute of her saving the guy who's unconscious on the train tracks, who she's like in love with from afar. And like, that's kind of a ridiculous over the top meet cute. And then there's the meet cute of like her being in the hospital room with him and his whole big loud family coming in. And like that, you know, you wouldn't normally think of that as a meet cute, but it really feels very meet cute-esque because there's this huge misunderstanding going on and it is like setting up this comedy of errors. And yeah, I mean, none of them are like totally the traditional meet cute, because then later in that movie, she also meets the guy who's in a coma's brother, where it's like, he just gets home while she's sleeping on the couch and she hears him speak before they've ever spoken. And I don't know. I think it's like, there's the cool thing about romance is there's always some new way to tell a very similar story, you know?
So you were talking about structure before, which I love the structure of this and how you see their relationship and friendship over the years unfold through the flashbacks. And I'm curious, how did you decide on the opening scene? Did you always know that's how it was going to be? Or, you know, how did you, and two-parter, did you write it chronologically or not? How did you write that?
I'm like very surprised by my own answer to this, because I just don't understand why this book happened the way that it did. It was just so easy and it just is not supposed to be that easy. Yeah, the first scene I had in my head was the first scene in the book, which, for those of you who haven't read it yet, it starts with sort of, you know, there are these two distinct timelines, with the exception that the prologue is sort of just like plucked from kind of the middle, where the prologue is 5 summers ago. And then after that, it goes like 11 summers ago, 10 summers ago, 9 summers ago, and so on and so forth. But this scene from 5 summers ago is really like establishing like what their dynamic used to be before the book begins. And you see like they're not speaking anymore and you kind of jump back and learn their whole history. And for whatever reason, I had that in my head first. And I think that it's just because I knew their dynamic. And like, I think with the friends to lovers of it all, you know, when you're doing something like enemies to lovers or a different dynamic, I think a lot of times that first meet cute is really important. And that's kind of what defines like everything that comes after it. But because I knew I was going to be writing about two people who knew each other really, really well, the first thing that I had in my head was a scene where they already knew each other very, very well and how they would interact in this version of themselves. So I wrote that first and kind of established their dynamic and then started on the present day storyline. And weirdly enough, I actually did write it more or less as it's published, where I, you know, wrote the first present day scene and then jumped back to them first meeting and then wrote the next present day scene and jumped back to their ride home together and just moved forward through time. And it was like really, it was really rewarding as a writer because I didn't actually know why they weren't speaking to one another when I started the book. I had only like three ideas and they're probably like the only three ideas anyone could have guessed. So it's like a mystery that's like you have it narrowed down pretty much from the beginning, but I didn't know for sure. And I wanted to see how they were acting in the present and to see how they had gotten to know each other before I decided like what had wrenched them off course. So as I went, it was kind of like I was writing from both sides and met in the middle and really understood what had gone wrong and why it mattered so much. And it just was a blissful drafting experience that I will miss for the rest of my life.
I'm so glad that it was a rewarding experience for you as a writer during the process, as it was as a reader. So yay.
Too. I mean, really, I did have this feeling of like, this is so easy. That must mean it's bad. Right. And I think I sent it to my editor just expecting to find out it was totally unreadable because it just felt like it was pouring out. So I've been very relieved that readers have actually been like, this was a great reading experience instead of like, you clearly were alone for too long before you wrote this.
No, it's good. So let's talk about some of the vacations and travels. Were any of them inspired by your own experiences?
Yeah, they were all pretty much inspired by my own experiences, except for the present day Palm Springs trip. I was planning to take a research trip during revision and, you know, kind of check what I had gotten online against what it was like in real life and see if anything surprising happened that I could work in. But then COVID hit and that was off the table. And so I had to really like rely heavily on the internet. And luckily I've heard from at least one friend, my audiobook narrator actually, who lives in Palm Springs at least part-time. And she was like, when I read that this was going to be set in the summer in Palm Springs, I was really hoping you were going to address the fact that it is very hot in Palm Springs in the summer. So she was like, yes, that was accurate. You nailed that. Which was a relief. But yeah, so much of it came from real life. And even like most of the inside jokes were just jokes that came to me while I was writing. But there's one moment where one of the characters says like too many wine and is like laughing really hard. And that came from like a family friend who actually said that at a wine tasting when she just like couldn't stop laughing because she had had too many wine. So yeah, it was really fun because I got to pull from so many trips and I realized that a lot of what I was pulling from were the things that went really wrong. And that made me have a new appreciation for the parts of a trip that really suck. You're just like, oh, I'm going to remember that forever.
Absolutely. Were there any destinations that didn't make it into the book that you had wanted to talk about?
There really weren't too many. I mean, there were, if I could have had more time to travel and see more stuff, I would have loved to have had more international destinations. The reason, you know, there's one trip that doesn't happen because it's an international trip that I hadn't actually been on and I just didn't really want to like write from Google. That's like not as fun for me. And, you know, Tuscany and Croatia, like I took, that was like a trip that I took where I hit both of those places. And that was like my first ever, other than like Canada, like my first outside of North America travel. So if I were able to write this book again in 5 years, there would be a lot more places in it, hopefully. But no, I pretty much knew like those were most of the places that I had traveled enough or had formative enough experiences to like feel like I could write about.
Do you have any dream destinations for yourself, Emily?
Yeah, I have so many. I really, really, really want to go to Japan. That's one of the first, like not even anywhere specific, which is like shows how much I've traveled that I'm just like the whole country of Japan, but I just want to go see like beautiful ancient buildings and ancient forests and eat really good food. And yeah, I would love to go to Japan. I want to go to Scotland, and actually I'm getting, assuming that the world keeps healing, I'm going to Scotland next summer for a writing event, the rare, like rare author signing. And I've never been really anywhere. So I'm so excited to see Edinburgh and hopefully like a little bit more of Scotland.
Scotland is one of my favorite places in the
world.
Where
should I go? Tell me where to go.
So, okay, I'll send you a whole like okay. Pinterest thing because I did the trip a while ago, but I saved everywhere I went.
Wow.
And so I have a bunch of information. I'll send it to you later.
That would be amazing because I hate planning trips. I just love taking them.
Mm-hmm. I completely understand that. So what do you think makes for a good travel companion?
Oh my gosh. I think somebody who you can laugh about things with. That I think that's the most important, because things always do go wrong when you're traveling. And if you're with someone who, like, I mean, I get really stressed out when things go wrong. So if I'm with someone who gets really stressed out, that's okay, I guess. But it's best if you're able to like shake things off kind of quickly. And I think, you know, there's also the fact of like, if you are a hyper planner, and you actually probably don't want to go on a trip with another hyper planner, because you're going to end up wanting to do different things. But if you take someone like me who just wants to kind of follow you around while you do all the research, that's great. So yeah, some of my favorite trips have been with my friends who are more like type A, and we'll just be like, here is where we're going. Here are all the restaurants that like we're going to and why we're going to them and like all of the, you know, landmarks we need to see. And I'm just like, yes, I will follow you. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a good dynamic to have for traveling. So, you know, we are the Feminist Book Club podcast. So I'm curious, what does it mean to you to be a feminist?
Oh my gosh.
I know that's a very loaded question.
Yeah, but I think it's a great question, because I think for a while, like feminism kind of just turned into like something that's like being sold to you everywhere, like at Target. And you're just like, okay, like maybe, I don't know. I think that feminism is about, to me, like if you're going to be a feminist, you also have to be like anti-racist, anti-xenophobia, anti-transphobia. I think to be a feminist, you need to be fully committed to complete equality of people. And that, I just don't think that works if you pull out any of those like little Jenga strips. So I think it's just about like everybody having the freedom to be their most authentic selves and not living in it, trying to, you know, take apart a society that judges you for that or pushes you into a role that is not right for you.
Absolutely. And how do you think your definition of feminism informs your work?
I think, well, first of all, this is like, you know, kind of on the lighter end of things, but I think, you know, when I talk to people and they're like, well, do you classify your book as rom-com or do you classify it as, you know, women's fiction, or what do you think of it as? I try to claim the book as romance as often as possible, even while recognizing that it does straddle like a couple of different genres, because I think one like kind of messaging that was very common for me growing up, and I don't know if it's still this way, but growing up, I really got the message that quote unquote, like girl things or like traditionally feminine things in, you know, scare quotes were bad, and that you weren't as smart or as interesting if you liked those things. And I think like just falling into the romance genre as a reader and writer has been so healing for me to just be like, to say like these things have been denigrated for so long, and really for no other reason than the fact that like they're largely written and read by women. And so we treat them as lesser than. But I also think, you know, there are so many romance writers out there now who are actively like using their sweet love stories and their steamy love stories to, again, like take apart the like structure of society and to question the things that are unhealthy and bad for us and hurtful to the people around us. And, you know, like just seeing authors find ways to make consent sexy and like, just like, I don't know. It's just such a beautiful, like little corner of the universe. And I think in my books, I kind of just try, like, I just really try to walk the walk, I guess, is what I would say is like, I'm always trying to ride that line where it's like, it's not going to be like preachy, but I think like it's pretty obvious where my characters stand on most things. And just trying to make it like a safe, pleasant reading experience for as many people as possible.
Love it. And I completely agree. Do you have any writers, whether it's romance or not, who you are especially loving right now?
Oh my gosh, so many. Okay, get ready for the longest list ever, also while I look around. So right now I am rereading Alyssa Cole's An Extraordinary Union, which it, yeah, again, for those of you at home, Christine's eyes just widened favorably at this mention. This book is so good. It's a literal spy story set during the Civil War that's also a really great romance and just like so well written, so well researched, so complex. Like the dynamics at play are so complex and handled so beautifully. And I'm really excited now to try Alyssa Cole's thriller because that looks great. And I've kind of been on a thriller kick. Again, we're seeing some excitement in the studio audience.
It's really good.
It looks so good. And now I was going to wait to go pick up a hard copy, but I might do Kindle because I am in a rush to read it. Because I have been reading other thrillers, and I recently read Lucy Foley's The Guest List, which was really great. Okay, so I lent out my copy of The Other Black Girl, which is sort of a thriller that's a genre bender, also fantastic. Read it the day I got it and then immediately lent it out. The author's name I think is like Zakiya Harris? We might have to look that up. But The Other Black Girl, it just came out, it's fantastic. It's, yeah, weird and genre bendy. But in romance, going back, I've been reading more historical romance from Sherry Thomas and Tessa Dare and Julia Quinn, Sarah McLean, just like so much romance. I recently read kind of like on the lighter end of the steam spectrum, Suzanne Park's So We Meet Again, which comes out very soon. And I really loved that. Just super cute and will make you very hungry because the main character is always cooking, which I'm a big fan of. Mm-hmm. And One Last Stop by Casey McQuiston was fantastic. Again, sort of a genre bender. So cute. I'm going to stop because I could just go on forever, but all of those.
All of the above. Those are all great. And I'll add things in the show notes. So don't worry. What do you hope readers will take away from People We Meet on Vacation?
I think, you know, first and foremost, I really just want them to have a good time and to get a little break from the mundane and the stress and pressure of the real world. But also I think beyond that, I just want people to feel understood and seen as far as like getting to that point of feeling like maybe you want something different and it's time to reevaluate what comes next for you. I think that that's a really valuable lesson for me, or it has been in my life. And so if people are kind of wondering or like looking for that sign that they should like go after something new or try something new, even you should do it.
Love it. And what, if you're okay to talk about it, what are you working on now or next? Can we get a little teaser?
We'll do a little sneak peek. More will be coming later on in the summer. I'm not sure when this will go up. So it not too long, you will see like a cover and a title and everything. But at this point, I will say I'm doing another adult rom-com that comes out next summer. It is very book centric again, which is always a blast. And in a small specific way, it is kind of a tribute to You've Got Mail.
You know, your books specifically, and romance, rom-coms in general bring a lot of joy into my life, especially the last year or so. And I know for a lot of our readers and listeners, they feel the same way. And I'm curious what has been bringing joy into your life, big or small?
Oh, that's such a nice question. I love that. I mean, in the beginning of the pandemic, it really was like historical romance. I had never read that. It was just like, wow, I had no idea I would like this so much. So that was really nice. It's funny, but I think like getting a lot more like loungewear, which I think we all did. We all did that when we were like, oh, we don't have to wear hard pants anymore. But I think that actually has been really nice because I am a person who often my comfy clothes are like hideous and they're just like things I've inherited or owned for forever. And there's like such a joy in being like, even when I'm comfortable, I'm going to look like myself. Like I'm going to dress like myself. And I don't know, like that's a really small thing, but it just feels like freeing to be like, oh, even my pajamas can be cute, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm all about the hashtag caftan life now.
Oh my gosh. Yes. It's caftan summer, I would say.
Yes.
That's the weather for it.
Yes. Well, this has been amazing. Thank you so much. Let's see, for anyone who doesn't already follow Emily on Instagram, you can find her at Emily Henry Writes. And seriously, if you haven't read People We Meet on Vacation yet, snag yourself a copy. It's such a great book and it really will just bring you joy and all of the like heartwarming feelings and wanderlust and goodness. So thank you so much, Emily.
Thank you so much. This was such a wonderful conversation.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of Feminist Book Club, the podcast. Want to be part of the club? Here's how you can join us. Obviously, subscribe to our podcast and leave a rating and review for brownie points. Follow along on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, and TikTok. All of those links are in the show notes. Sign up for our newsletter to be the first to know what our next monthly book pick is. And check out our award-winning monthly book subscription service. Oprah Magazine named it one of their favorite book boxes, and Shonda Rhimes called us one of her favorite subscription boxes in general. There are multiple membership levels for any budget, and it's an excellent way to support the show and the voices you heard today. See you in the club.
Well-read woman is a